Let's move on to the Manchester Derby.
What is there to move on to, Julian?
There's not much there to move on to, I'm going to be honest.
Oh, my goodness.
We here! Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the 6-Yard Box Podcast. You are tuning in for episode 90.
90. Big 90.
The big 90. Oh, we have 10 episodes left until the...
Yep.
Holy shit, man. Oh, my God. Me and Antoine are here delivering a two-man edition in my basement. This may have been a setup that you do not recognize, but you soon will. Let's put it that way.
It'll be a one-time setup. Or maybe a two-time setup.
Yeah.
We'll get good. We'll get good.
Ignore the iPhones we're recording.
Yeah. Ignore the poor quality mics. The poor background. It'll all get better.
You are peaking there, brother. I see.
Am I peaking? Maybe a little lower.
All right, today we are going over the recent Premier League games since we haven't potted in, over a week?
Yes.
We're going over the Champions League games, of course, putting the focus on that, and overall, the happenings in the football world over the past 8 days. First of all, how are you feeling, my friend?
Look, you can't be asking me how I feel and expecting a negative answer right after PSG absolutely thrashed Aston Villa. Well, not thrash, but played very well against Aston Villa. So, doing very well, repping the PSG, repping the most promising youngster in the world.
Dude, and, I'm on the train, man. Like, vastly on the train.
Yeah, well, obviously not most promising youngster in the world, because that goes to, you know, the extraterrestrial figure in Lamine Yamal. But second best, I can take.
That's fair.
I can take.
That's a big Kubarsi. Claim. That's a big claim.
Kubarsi's up there, too.
Kubarsi's up there.
No, I'm fucking under 21, second best youngster.
Bro, you didn't say that before we started recording, so I couldn't do my research into who can rival that.
Well, so, who can rival that? You have Kubarsi.
I still think Endrick is underrated conversation. Genuinely, I do.
Come on, bro. You have a guy scoring in a quarterfinal of the Champions League versus a guy scoring in the Copa del Rey semifinals. There's fucking levels to this. Like, we'll get into it, and I do think that Real Madrid could have utilized him in their quarterfinal game against Arsenal. But We'll get into it.
I see you. Watching him and then watching Garnacho today. Oh my god.
Yeah, gonna be rough. Good game coming up today though. I'm excited for that game.
Yeah. Oh man. I'm so excited for Man United Leon and then Cherki to score a hat trick and Antoine to be
glazing him.
Oh my god.
Anyone that says football is dead right now is, their eyes must not be working.
Or they're just watching the Prem. Or they're blinking.
When you look at the quarterfinals that we just had, all four games.
Yeah.
Man, some great, great games from start to finish.
That is.
And the goals, let me not even mention the goals. The goals, you had the three against Villa from PSG. Those are three incredible goals. Barcelona scored one or two very, very nice goals, very nice team goals.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, Declan Rice's two free kicks, or 2 days ago. Incredible. And then Lautaro Martinez, this is Travella.
Oh my god, what a great sequence, man. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, beautiful.
So where do you want to start with all this? Because there have been Prem games over the weekend that we have not talked about. The league leaders lost on the weekend to Fulham. We had a Manchester derby. I know it doesn't feel as important, but we should skim over it real quick.
I think we don't spend too much time on it.
Also, FPL roundup today.
Oh, is there? Okay. I'm excited for you to lead that one.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Okay. So, let's quickly go over it. I want to talk about Arsenal's 1-1 draw over Everton, which I'm not going to focus on too much because it's going to be positive Arsenal talk today.
Mm-hmm.
Talk me through it a little bit, Antoine.
Man, I'm not going to lie, Julian. 7:30 game was not up. Was not up for that.
I wasn't up either.
I was banking on Blake to be back to talk about this one, because did he even watch it himself?
I don't know, man.
I mean, his Arsenal view in the Premier League is very negative, so I'd be surprised if he did watch it. But, I mean, there's not much I can tell you about it. I mostly watched La Liga this week.
Illiman and DI getting an equalizer from the penalty spot after Trossard's first opening goal. And it's a 1-1 draw for Arsenal away at Everton, which I don't want to say confirms a league for Liverpool, but it prevents us from having that conversation after they ended up losing at Fulham.
Yeah, it's like that meme you sent in the group chat. Guy loses hope. Guy loses hope he thought he didn't know he had, or something like that. What was it?
Guy loses last little hope, little bit of hope that he didn't even know he had. Yeah. That was Blake and Miles. That's
exactly the situation.
But, like, I think they're just apathetic towards it because, like...
Was there ever really that much hope? No.
That's what I'm saying. So, like, the Prem feels, like, inconsequential.
The league has been dead since... Fuck. Since... I want to say December.
True. True. It's such polar opposites because if you're just watching the Prem, you're having such a terrible year. Mm-hmm. But if you're watching outside the Prem, you're looking at Serie A. You're watching PSG this year. You're really locked in on the Champions League, the La Liga title race. This season has been fucking amazing.
This is how it should be. I think obviously the level of the Prem should be a little bit higher.
Yeah.
But in the last few years, we've seen the levels of the other leagues kind of regressing, and you had all the best players playing in the Premier League for that little bit of time.
Yes.
Where after Messi and Ronaldo, it wasn't that great, but now you look at the very best players in the world, and obviously you have some great players in the Prem,
mm-hmm.
but the most of the superstars and the great players, they're playing in La Liga, they're playing in Serie A, and that I think that's how football should be. There should be more dispersed. The best players in the world should be more dispersed around Europe.
I still think if you look at talent-wise on paper, it's still mostly Prem.
Yes, obviously. And the level of football, I'd also say, is it's different from La Liga, the level of football in the Prem, but I think it's you have the best managers in the Prem as well.
Fair.
And it's more advanced in the Prem. More physical in the Prem.
That is fair enough. Okay. Quickly going over, we just mentioned Real Madrid. We just mentioned La Liga. They lost 2-1 at Valencia. You had the Vinicius missed penalty, which cost them this game, even though he scored. And then eventually Valencia win it in, like, the dying minutes. This is big for the title race, even though Barcelona also dropped points over the weekend. Barca are now, I believe, if my memory is certainly correct, 4 points clear at the top. Yes, four points clear. No game in hand over the big other two. But it looks like their league to lose at this point.
Yeah, with Real Madrid, it's the same analogy I used last week with the towel. It's the last few drops. It's the last few resources that they have. You sensed it against Sociedad in the Copa del Rey semifinal second leg.
Mm-hmm.
They lost against Valencia. I want to say, I don't know why Vinicius is still taking pens when Mbappe is winning them.
Oh, my God,
It's a serious problem because Mbappe is seriously contending for the Pichichi, the best goal scorer in La Liga. And then you have him winning a pen. He's very, very good at pens. We know this throughout his entire career. There's only one or two big moments where he missed pens in. But you win the pen. You're in the running for the best goal scorer in La Liga in your first season. I think he's one goal away from making history at Real Madrid as the debutant player to score the most goals or something like that. And yet, Vinicius still takes the pen. Now, I do see the side of the argument where he needs his confidence back. He needs to score goals. But when in a title race, when you absolutely need to get points somehow, some way, I don't care about giving a player confidence that he doesn't have. Vinicius mm-hmm. is a world-class player. He can find that confidence somewhere else.
Facts.
Taking that penalty is unbelievable.
Penalties is never the way to get your confidence back. And Vinny has never been one to look for, you know, some dodgy penalties just to get his confidence
mm-hmm,
back.
Mm-hmm.
You need to give him the ball. You need to let him do his thing in open play. Not just some pity penalty, you know? I don't understand it. Mbappe is a great penalty taker. He always has been. He scored them in massive moments. Like, Vinny just recently missed a big one against Atletico Madrid. So, like, considering that, it's like, exactly. What are we doing?
Yeah, that too. And that was also a penalty that Mbappe had won.
Yes.
Against Atletico Madrid.
Yes, that was a beautiful, beautiful sequence that won him the penalty. Oh, my God. Yeah, we're going to get onto Real Madrid more when we talk about the Champions League, but there is, like, that superstar problem there that I don't know if Ancelotti can pull them out of. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, Ancelotti shouldn't even be there. Let's be very honest. We'll get onto it.
His last season?
100%.
Yeah?
1,000%, Julian.
Xabi Alonso next year?
Yes.
I don't think Xabi Alonso fixes this, though.
I think he does. I think, well, let's get onto it later, but Real Madrid have a tactical problem. I don't think it's as much as a superstar problem, because when you play for Real Madrid, you play for the biggest club in the world, and you're kind of humbled by that, right? So obviously there's going to be the big egos, but as we know, Ancelotti is the best at managing those egos, at managing big egos. Him Valid. And Zidane, Valid. Top, right? I just think it's a tactical thing, because when I watch Real Madrid play, and when I have watched Real Madrid play this season as a whole, even last season, there's hints of it. There's no identity in that team. There's no identity. So there needs to be that manager that transforms this team into a team with true identity. I think the game against Arsenal this week, it's It's the last straw for Carlo Ancelotti. Like, it was his last chance to prove himself as a Real Madrid manager. But in my opinion, his last chance in my eyes was the Clasico, where they lost 4-0 against Barcelona. Because, man, they can concede way more in that game. And if they concede one or two more, I think he's sacked on the spot. And I think he should be sacked on the spot. And I think
Before the end of the season.
Yes, 100%. The bell should have been ringing when you get thrashed 4-0 by Barcelona. Or maybe 5-2. Whichever game came second.
There's multiple.
Yeah, whichever game came second, where they got thrashed by Barcelona, he should have been sacked right after that game.
Really?
I think so.
Damn.
I think so.
Well, who do you bring in mid-season?
Mid-season's difficult. I don't... Look, I'm a big believer right now that there's 10-plus managers in the world that can do a better job than Ancelotti with Real Madrid.
I think they have such a ego problem that... I don't think the conventional tactical manager could do it. Like, I don't think Real Madrid need the same type of manager that, like, a Man United... Or like one of those teams needs. Like, you know, like, you'll bring in a manager because you want to, like, build a project and you know he has the tactical, like, the tactical knowledge to put out the best team and set them up right. But Real Madrid, they need something different.
Well, I'm not saying that they need to be playing, like, prime Barca and they need to be tiki-taka. I just think that... They need an identity. And right now, there is no identity. Who can you rely on in the midfield this season apart from Dani Ceballos? And that's fucking embarrassing.
That's true.
Dani Ceballos was the guy you were relying on this season in terms of your midfield.
Good point.
Ever since Cruz retired, it's not been the same. It's simple as that.
Well, hopefully by next year, they'll have a Valverde back in there with John on the right. But anyways, bro, imagine Hansi Flick with this Real Madrid team.
Disgusting.
That's the type of manager they need because he is a disciplinarian, but... He's also amazing at building attacks. And I think speaking of that, I saw that like Barcelona are now like at this point in the season, the highest ever scoring
top five
league side.
They already I thought they were close to reaching it. I didn't think they were over it.
Like by this stage of the season, nobody had scored more ever. So they'll probably break that record.
Yeah, they're in the running to break that record.
Yeah, which is
insane.
Mental.
Insane.
Mental.
Yeah.
There was the Hansi Flick Rafinha argument. Did you see that?
A little bit of it. I didn't look too much into it.
I didn't really look too much into it either. But they had a little scuffle after the 1-1 draw against Real Betis, and I don't know. It seemed like I'm gonna read up more on this, but Rafinha seemed like very upset after the final whistle, and then like publicly gone into it with Hansi Flick. I know he's like a disciplinarian and everything, but like Rafinha sometimes is just you get into too much in your head, lad.
Yeah, I remember in the last international break too, he was like digging shots at Argentina, Rafinha was. So maybe there's a speaking of ego, there's an ego thing there too.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't look too much into it.
I don't want to because at the end of the day, he put up a great performance against Dortmund.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to the Manchester Derby.
What is there to move on to, Julian?
There's not much there to move on to, I'm going to be honest.
Oh, my goodness. Give me my 2 hours back.
Boring-ass game. Did I tell you Serena has been making an essay about Man United?
Yes, you have.
About David Beckham.
Yeah.
She had to make an essay on, like player motivation, how it relates to the David Beckham documentary, talk about Sir Alex Ferguson, shouting out, like, Roy Keane and Gary Neville in her essay. I'm like...
That's insane. Crossing worlds.
Who is this girl? And then she goes, you know what? I'm gonna watch the Manchester Derby this weekend.
Oh my god!
Because I'm feeling back into soccer and I'm feeling back into Man United. Recipe. And then she watches this shit.
Wow!
And now she'll never watch another game again.
Oh my goodness!
So thanks, guys. It's pretty rough. Like, I can barely tell you what the hell happened in this game. I don't want to say we deserve to win because there wasn't much of that either, but. Overall, like, a somewhat decent performance. And look, I would have taken a draw against City. I would have hoped it was a little more exciting, but I'll take a draw against City.
Of course.
There's not much more to say. Shout out Kevin De Bruyne. I don't know if we've been on pod since he said he's leaving City.
I don't think so, no.
Shout out Kevin De Bruyne.
Yeah. Wow. One of the, probably the best midfielder, Premier League midfielder.
Absolutely agree. It's so much nostalgia bias.
Well, okay.
Scholes, Gerrard.
Okay, Scholes, Gerrard, Lampard, absolutely warranted though. Like, let's be honest, they were great.
They were world beaters. I'm just saying, maybe
it's very hard to compare eras. But I think obviously it's gonna be easier for me to put Kevin De Bruyne in front because I haven't watched as many Gerrard Scholes and Lampard games as I've watched Kevin De Bruyne games. But I don't know. I just think there's that technical quality in Kevin De Bruyne, where he can put a pass wherever he needs it, wherever he wants it.
Yep.
He was incredible.
He had everything, dude.
He was incredible. But it's good that he's actually moving away now, because you can tell now watching this game, it's not Kevin De Bruyne anymore.
Yeah, he's lost a lot of mobility. Yeah. So
I think this Manchester derby before moving on to the Champions League, it served as a very, very bad publicity for the Premier League.
Mm.
And you have, because you have everybody, not everybody, but a lot of people on social media saying the Premier League this season isn't the best. And I was kind of on the fence about that. I mean, there's some good underdog stories in the Premier League this season. But to somebody that turns the TV on Sunday to watch a Premier League game for the first time in a long time, to see, oh, it's a big game, Manchester Derby, City versus United. Let's see what this brings. Man, I feel bad for the people that watched the Premier League that don't usually do on Sunday.
I'll still say the Prem's the best league in the world.
This season, no.
They've had an off year, but I mean, like, even in an off year, look what Arsenal just did to Real Madrid. Yeah, I mean,
in terms of team quality, sure. Like, there's a bigger number of good teams in the Premier League compared to the other leagues. That is 100%.
That is facts. But the top of the top, yeah.
Yeah.
Madrid, Barca, even Bayern to a certain extent, Inter. PSG, Inter, like, pound for pound, just better teams.
Mm-hmm.
So, in that aspect, I do agree. Shall we move on to the Champions League now?
Sure.
Okay. We were alluding to it before. Arsenal, 3-0 winners at the Emirates against Real Madrid.
Wow.
Probably the worst time for Blake not to be here on the pod?
Yes, 100%. I would not love some Arsenal bias any time more than right now.
It would hit so hard if Blake was in my spot right now. Yeah. Just crying.
The best Arsenal performance under Mikel Arteta. Let's be honest. Let's just get it out the way. Who else? Which other?
I wouldn't say the best overall performance, but I'd definitely say the biggest. Obviously, the biggest night. Result.
I think their performance was very good.
I think their performance was very good too. They've probably had some better ones, against City was very good, and like you'll have
the most important.
Facts.
The most important.
Facts.
You are receiving the best club of all time at your stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And like, thrashing them 3-0, putting them in the blender.
Like, I saw someone saying, like, oh, when the Emirates was being built in 2006, these are the kind of nights that Arsene Wenger was dreaming of. Hmm. Going up against titans like Real Madrid in the quarterfinals of the Champions League with players on your team worth 100 plus million pounds.
Yeah.
And you thrash them like that. And these are the kind of moments that Arsenal fans have been missing for so, so long. And it feels like if or when they do start winning those big, big, big titles, this is going to be the point where we say, okay, this is when they really started reaching like that level.
It's a turning point. It's a turning point for sure. 100%.
It's a proving point as much as it is a turning point. Yeah. Because I remember the same thing with Liverpool in 2018, 2019, Klopp had still not won a trophy with them. We were still a bit unsure of it. Mm-hmm. But first it was them beating the Centurion City team in the Champions League in 2018.
Yeah.
And then it was like that comeback against Barcelona at Anfield in 2019, eventually leading to them winning the Champions League altogether.
Mm-hmm.
This is the kind of statement, performance, and result that we could look back on saying like, yep, this is when Arsenal became the team that won the Premier League or the Champions League or whatever it may end up being. I think it's just as likely that they still go trophyless this year.
Yeah.
And this is still just like a flash in the pan.
Uh-huh.
But still overall, in a vacuum, a night that Arsenal fans should never, ever forget.
I want to thank Arsenal personally.
Oh.
Because football won on Tuesday.
Yeah.
The amount of times this season where Real Madrid pulled a result or won a game when they did not deserve it
mm-hmm.
is uncountable. Not even just this year. In the past 4 years, there are so many examples that I can give where Real Madrid are the second best team on the pitch and still win. Mm-hmm. Champions League final 2022. Against City when Rodrigo scores the two late goals. Against Chelsea that year. Against Leipzig last year. This year against Atletico Madrid. I didn't think they were the best team, both legs considered. Today, or two days ago,
yep.
Arsenal put them in their spot. Put them where they belong.
Facts.
And football won.
This is what always happens. I always find whenever there's like a long streak, whenever like say Liverpool were thinking about going unbeaten in 2020, mm-hmm. when Leverkusen went on the crazy run last year, when this Real Madrid team, not necessarily going unbeaten, but just having that streak and pedigree in the Champions League, that kind of record always falls down in incredible fashion.
Yeah.
Like Leverkusen in the Europa League final. I'm thinking that 3-0 loss Liverpool had against Watford.
Mm.
And I'm thinking this is the game where that notion that Real Madrid cannot be beaten in the Champions League doesn't just break, but it comes crashing down. And it's almost unrecoverable unless they pull out the impossible at the Bernabeu.
Yeah, now you have to solidify that first statement performance by assuring your spot in the semifinal.
I don't want to say which won't be easy. It won't be necessarily hard to keep a 3-0 lead. We've seen, again, I think Blake was saying that they haven't conceded 3+ goals in a game since December 2023.
Yeah. It was Luton Town, I think.
Against Luton Town?
Yeah.
So it's not impossible for Real Madrid, definitely not. But it's going to be a tall task to break down this Arsenal team, I believe. No Gabriel, sure. But they're going to be sitting in that block all fucking game if they have to.
So the people saying that Real Madrid are still going to qualify, I mean, brother, look at how your team's been playing this entire season, please.
For real.
There's differences from previous seasons where you actually played good football. This year, it's been bad football, but scraping by. I don't see a world in which Real Madrid can somehow pull 3 goals back at Arsenal, where Arsenal also doesn't get any chances and doesn't convert their chances.
Facts.
No, I would see it as almost impossible.
Same.
Then again, it's Real Madrid, though. You never count them out.
It's Real Madrid, man. Yeah. So many players to shout out.
Yes, I was going to say a couple individualities that we need to mention for sure.
Obviously, Declan Rice.
Yeah. I want to say more obviously, Bukayo Saka.
Yeah?
Who?
Specifically in the first half, I found.
And in the beginning of the second half for me, that's a legacy-defining game right there. That is a game that starts conversations for you as a player as one of the most respected and best wingers in the world. Seriously. Mm. It was a press conference that he had before the game where the journalist asks him, between Vinicius Jr. and Mbappe, where do you put yourself? Where do you compare yourself there? And he kind of just looks at the commentator. And you can tell he wasn't too pleased with that question because he seriously believes that he's on par with these players. Now, he might actually not actually be on par with those players in terms of quality. But that game on Tuesday is a game that solidifies him as a very, very good winger. And it's a legacy-defining game in the sense that now we can have these conversations between him and Rodrigo, I think.
Mm-hmm.
If he hasn't passed him yet, he's very close to passing him yet because mm-hmm. you look at Rodrigo's game against Arsenal, that same game, and it's abysmal.
Mm.
Him against Salah, obviously he's not on that level, but yeah. Soon, like now you can tell that he's on the trajectory to get to that level.
For sure. And like, you know what? That's funny because I actually didn't notice the Saka performance that much. There's obviously, you think of moments, you think of those couple of balls across the box that he pulled out in the first half. That's like overall, just like his overall play, linking up everything and just being that outlet that Arsenal can go through. I think they are such a different team with him in the side. You just notice it so much in games like this. I thought Miles Lewis-Skelly deserves such a massive shout out. He looked fantastic. Being an inverted wingback, getting the assist for the Marino goal.
Insane.
Insane.
What a player. What a mentality.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of the last fullback that kind of burst onto the scene like that at a very, very young age.
Mm-hmm.
And the first name that comes to mind is the other left back that was playing in this game, David Alaba. He kind of reminds me of him when he first burst onto the scene, because he had that killer mentality for Bayern that nothing fazed him. And I'm kind of seeing a little bit of that in Miles
Lewis-Skelly. That's a decent comparison.
I'm seeing a little bit of that in Miles Lewis-Skelly, where he's not afraid to put in a challenge. He doesn't get scared to get shrugged off the ball. He goes in for the duels.
Yep.
He's a really good player. He's a really good player. To step up like this in a Champions League quarterfinal against the best club of all time, you have to do it, and he did it fucking very well.
For sure. Other shout-outs I want to give to, I mean, there's an obvious one that we'll get to, but before any goals went in, Courtois was man of the match.
Yes.
He was.
Yes.
And that's kind of an indictment on how bad Real Madrid was, 100%. Obviously. That always is the case, but like some of the saves he was pulling out, I was like, wow, this is going to be one of those performances.
He's probably the only Madrid player, definitely the only Madrid player that can come out of that game with his head held high.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
Yeah.
He had a worthy performance. Without him, it's six.
Yeah, low key.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen the double saves he's pulling out. I'm like, it's going to take someone special to beat that.
And it did.
And it did. And it did. The Declan Rice free kick. Oh my God. Jesus Christ. Wow. Was Roberto Carlos in the building?
Was he?
He was.
Actually?
Yeah, they panned to him after the goal went in. Because it was
panning from Rice to Roberto Carlos. That is not something I would have
imagined. And now I'm seeing all like the fucking cringe videos of him coming through at West Ham, like dabbing and dancing. And we let this guy.
That one video of him, what is it? It's like he's on a show and he's like singing ice.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Yeah. This guy, man. I saw a tweet from an Arsenal fan in the Emirates before the game, and it was like, Declan Rice is taking free kicks here before kickoff, and is every single one is going top corner.
Oh my God,
really? Yeah. And then everybody comes back to it 3 hours later, like, you fucking goat.
Holy shit.
Oh my God.
That's insane. I was watching the game with my brother, and the first goal is, no one expects that, right? But the second goal, we're both telling each other, like, can he do it back to back? Can he do it back to back? And the fact that he does, bro, we both stand up, hands on our heads, jaws dropped, bro. It was insane.
That second one is somehow even better.
Yeah.
Fucking unreal.
It's almost as if the second one is so good that it takes away from the quality of the first one.
I know.
No one's talking about the first one, but the first one is insane. The curve
curl on that is ridiculous. He didn't go over the wall. He went around it. He went
around the wall. Like, the quality you need to have to strike a ball like that. Fuck. Oh my goodness. And the second one is just, how can you get
that screenshot ball of it in the very top right corner?
Yeah.
Brother.
Oh my God.
What are we doing here, man?
Insane. One more shout out I need to mention is Thomas Partey.
Oh.
Yeah. Great game all around. Very solid. When it's nil-nil, he's that guy in the midfield that soaks up the pressure and doesn't really allow Real Madrid to get past their final third. And ultimately, just a very solid game from a player that probably has been one of the most consistent for Arsenal and not talked about enough. I think Partey this season has been very, very good, and no one really talks about him.
Valid.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, overall, amazing performance from Arsenal. If they pull out even half of that at the Bernabeu, they're going to go through, and they're going to go through comfortably. Yeah. Let's move.
Should we talk about a little bit of Rodrigo first?
Rodrigo? Sure.
Yeah.
Sure, we can go for it. This is like when he got on the ball. Yeah, I didn't notice.
I kind of mentioned this in the group chat. I don't see enough criticism for him, and you didn't agree with my point there. But if you are a good player like Rodrigo, as good of a player as Rodrigo, and you're playing in a quarterfinal of the Champions League, where your team needs something, and you aren't visible on the pitch until the 60th minute. Seriously, I did not know he was playing until the 60th minute. Obviously, I knew he was playing, but he didn't appear on the screen with the ball. Like once he didn't appear on the screen with the ball. If you're of that level, you need to make something happen. And when you don't make something happen, there needs to be criticism on you. And I don't think there was enough criticism on Rodrigo that day.
That is fair. I also want to point out that literally everything for Real Madrid was going down the left. They looked so stale going down there. And yes, Rodrigo, when he did get those few opportunities, like he has in the past, should have grabbed that chance by the scruff of its neck and made something happen, because we know he can do that. Obviously, he does not come out this game demanding more touches on the ball, because what he did with the ball was simply not good enough.
Yeah.
The fact that he only came off at the 85th minute is bad on Ancelotti, because Brahim Diaz, as of right now, is looking like a better option to use in these situations. I will also say, though, that I want to see, like, the touch map and, like, overall heat map of, like, where...
The heat map of Vinicius is hilarious.
Yeah?
It's hilarious. It's, like, just a couple dots.
I don't know if I could see it. No, I can't see
it. No, there's not. It's not on FOMO, but it's so funny. It's so funny.
Everything went down the left. Mbappe was playing on the left. Vinny was playing on the left. Bellingham was playing on the left. And whenever Camavinga or Modric got it, they would go find them. That's why I also feel like I never saw Valverde. Valverde was crazy quiet in this game going forward, because we never saw them go down the right. It was so frustrating.
And
that became so predictable for Arsenal to defend, especially on the side where you have Saliba and Timber rather than Kivior and the teenager.
You know? To be fair, though, every time Rodrigo did have the ball on the right side, he was getting locked up. He was getting locked up.
That is facts.
I think it all comes back to Ancelotti's tactics.
Mm-hmm.
Let's be honest. The fact that you start a 4-4-2 against Arsenal, playing Bellingham as a left midfielder.
I don't understand that.
Playing a 40-year-old in midfield.
Yeah.
Who has been good off the bench this season, but as a starter, absolutely not.
Yeah.
There's so many problems there. And the fact that your first attacking substitution in the game is at the 84th minute.
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing? You have all that talent on the bench. Arda Güler.
Oh my God. Endrick. I know. Brahim Diaz,
that's what I was looking for. You have so much talent on the bench
that
can elevate your game.
Can make something happen. That are desperate to make something happen.
Like for Arda Güler's dead ball. He's a dead ball specialist. Arda Güler in dead ball situations can send in a great cross, like on a corner or on a free kick, that can ultimately get on the head of a defender. I think that's definitely something you need for Real Madrid when things are going that bad.
Yeah.
Why not just what do you have to lose? What do you have to lose? Why keep Vinny on for 90 minutes?
Yep.
I don't get it.
Yeah. The thing with Rodrigo, like if we're getting to the specific Rodrigo Saka debate, this is kind of the point that I brought up. If they swapped places, I think Saka's production is going down and Rodrigo's production is going up because of the different situations that they're in. This is partly if Vinny wasn't on the field, right, they would use Rodrigo more. Mm-hmm. That's true. And because of that, over a season, he would produce more. He'd have more moments. Maybe in a game like this, he'd have better opportunities to make something happen. He got as many opportunities to shine in 85 minutes than Desiree Doué got in the first 20 of your game yesterday.
Yeah.
And Desiree Doué, after the first 20 minutes, I was like, damn, this guy's quiet.
Yes.
And then he pulls something out of his ass, and then he's amazing after that, you know? Rodrigo didn't have the specific chance to do that. And I think if it was Saka in his place, the same thing would have really happened. That's just the product of being the fourth head in a three-headed monster like Real Madrid. Like Blake was saying that if good player goes to worst team, he becomes worst player. That's not true. No. It's not that black and white, right? Your role on a team and your position in the hierarchy is almost going to be the biggest determinant of how much you're able to produce and how many opportunities you have to produce. And that's the problem with Rodrigo, that he doesn't have the opportunities in this team beyond even the fact that he's not even a right winger.
Yeah.
So, yeah. If, like, it's kind of an invalid point because, like, whatever, that is the situation. And I was still making the argument that he is a better player despite the situation.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, yeah, if this continues for Saka and the tie goes the way that it's going to keep going, then Saka will deservedly jump Rodrigo in that conversation.
Yep.
I still maintain, though, that Rodrigo would be a much better player and much more well-regarded if he did not play for Real Madrid.
Absolutely. I agree.
Overall, does Xabi Alonso come to this Real Madrid team next year and fix these issues?
Yes, I think so. I
don't know.
You just need an identity in this Real Madrid team, as I mentioned before. How quick did he make that Leverkusen squad have an identity and have a style of play?
Mm-hmm.
So quick.
Facts. I just feel like if you're bringing Xabi Alonso, you need a little bit of buffer time. You need a little bit of trust the process. And if Xabi Alonso comes in and those first couple of games looks a little rocky because, you know, he's trying to implement his tactics, the players aren't responding to it, maybe you're not getting the effort from the complete unit because, you know, your manager had the exact same issue last year at PSG when he was trying to implement this kind of system. But, you know, the Mbappes of the world wasn't really putting in the required effort to work as a unit. If that's not happening under Xabi Alonso, and I want to bet on it, then the tactics of Xabi Alonso don't work.
Fair.
So in that sense, beyond being an amazing tactician, does he have the cojones to manage this Real Madrid team? And I don't know of that yet.
He also played for Real Madrid, so he knows what it's like to wear the badge.
That is true. He should command the respect of the dressing room just like Zinedine Zidane did.
Yes.
But I don't know. I don't know about these players, man. I don't know about these players.
Yeah, some of them, notably Mbappe, we've seen it in PSG. We've seen it for France.
I think Vinny more than Mbappe.
No, I think Mbappe more than Vinny. Like there's moments on when Arsenal are on the ball in their own half where there's just nothing. They're just comfortable with the ball. Nothing is happening. No pressing involved. Nothing. And we saw it last season with PSG. It was the same thing against Dortmund when you absolutely needed something. It just seems like he doesn't want to work. And that's just a side of his game that isn't the best. Like the other side of his game is incredible. Don't get me wrong. He's an incredible player from that. But if he could just get the off the ball stuff off the ball part of his game a little bit better, man, he'd be incredible. Incredible.
He would. What are some other candidates we're thinking for the Real Madrid manager? Because outside of Xabi Alonso, I mean, per Fabrizio Romano, Xabi Alonso, he's option, and I quote, he's option 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 for Real Madrid. So there's not much of a backup plan after Xabi Alonso, as we can see. But if you cannot get him, who else do you go to, really?
That's a good question.
That's what I'm saying, man.
Arteta? Like,
not Arteta, bro. Arteta would not fucking work with this team.
No, he wouldn't.
So, you bring Zidane back?
No. Zidane is waiting for one thing, and it's for Deschamps to get the hell out of France.
Yeah. Jurgen Klopp?
Perhaps.
But then I think, I don't know, man. I don't know. I think Zidane would be, like, the best. Oh, what about an Allegri?
Ooh, I like that. I like
just a straight fucking results manager getting it done.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind that.
Yeah.
I mean, Allegri ball lately has been kind of dead in the last few seasons.
As we know.
So I don't know how that would fare with the good players of Real Madrid.
Yeah.
But, yeah, maybe.
If they came calling for, like, an Unai Emery, a Julen Lopetegui, like, a kind of manager like that.
An Unai I would like. I wouldn't mind an Unai Emery.
Yeah.
Lopetegui, I don't know. I think it's
getting... Yeah, Lopetegui. He was at Real Madrid, wasn't he?
I think so.
Yeah, that didn't go well.
It didn't?
No. I think he was the one after Zidane. Sure. I could be wrong.
Memorable, so it probably didn't go well.
Yeah. Yeah. But they are answering that call. I genuinely, if Real Madrid asked Arteta to join them in the summer, I don't think Arteta's going.
No, he shouldn't.
No. Yeah. If they can't figure out the manager situation and if they get that decision wrong next year, then poof, we're seeing a waste of talent on extreme levels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Florentino Perez is not going to like that either.
What's that?
Florentino Perez is not going to like that either.
No.
I think...
He'll manage the team himself.
I think it's a real possibility. There's that stint in their history where they didn't win a Champions League in like 10 years between like 2001 to 2014. And in that period, Barcelona are very, very good.
Yes.
And Florentino Perez goes absolutely crazy and just transforms the entire team, like flips it on its head. I think if Barcelona win a treble this year and continue to be on their ascendant rise next year and the years beyond that, and Real Madrid drop off in form even more, I don't think it's outrageous to think Florentino Perez could absolutely try to flip their...
That'd be such going a spending crazy
spree, going a selling spree.
Yeah, that's a crazy narrative shift because Real Madrid, like, we see we're seeing the opposite now between what Barca was between 2001, 2014, and mm-hmm. and what they are now. Like, those two situations have flipped completely, where Real Madrid is now the ones with uber success, yeah. and Barcelona is the one with now a decade-long dry spell in the Champions League.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's good to see the flip, though.
I don't mind that.
I'd rather Barcelona on top than overall.
Really?
Yeah. It's football, bro. It's
obviously, the Ronaldo era had me feeling a little bit of sympathy for Real Madrid.
Yeah.
And that's still carried on a little bit today, but I certainly wouldn't class myself as like a Real Madrid fan, not as much as I am just a football fan.
Mm-hmm.
So, either way, man, like, I think this next era of Barcelona is going to be crazy. I'm excited to see it.
It's going to be insane.
It's going to be insane.
Shall we move on?
Let's move on. The other game that day was Bayern at the Allianz Arena, suffering a 2-1 defeat to Inter. They had thought they had secured the draw mm-hmm. going to San Siro. And then Frattesi in the 88th minute with a beautiful team goal finishes yeah. it off. The exact same minute and second of that Pandev goal in 2011.
There's so many similarities with that. It's so actually, it's fucking insane.
It's insane. The actual chances of that. It's the same stadium, the same side of the stadium, the same corner flag he runs to, the same celebration taking his top off, the same Heineken ad behind the player celebrating,
yeah.
the same minute, the same second of the game.
They both take their shirt off. They both have an undershirt.
It's
insane. Like,
that is the fucking chances of that is crazy. It was at the Allianz Arena.
I think it was, yeah.
I'm okay. Sure it was. But like, what? What? I was losing my mind when I saw that, because like, there's no way this could be true.
Yeah. It's 87-28.
What? Anyways, before that, Inter just showed levels in this game. Like, I think Naps's love for Inter, we gotta talk to him again.
Yeah.
Because Naps's love for Inter is coming to roost. That Lautaro Martinez goal.
Oh my god.
So. Fucking oh my god. Nice, man.
We were treated to absolute worldies. I said this before, but man, that goal.
Oh my god.
That the first Inter goal was incredible. The entire sequence from the back of the pitch to the front of the pitch to the back heel from Thuram to the travella of Lautaro Martinez.
That's so elegant. Top bins,
unsavable, absolutely incredible.
The cross is coming in whipped so hard.
Yeah.
And he just kills it yeah. with one single touch yes. the outside of his foot.
Class.
Just knowing exactly where to put it. And it's literally put on a plate for Lautaro Martinez. He could hit it any way.
And he decides.
I'm just going to travella this straight into the top right corner. And the keeper stood no chance.
Yeah. It's one of those moments where you just watch football and you start dying in front of the TV.
You're
it's
like,
how did he do it? Like, you're just dead of laughter.
For real.
Insane.
Man. They didn't even have DeMarco in this game, too.
And that's what surprised me at the beginning. I didn't... Inzaghi didn't choose to start DeMarco.
Yeah.
Ultimately, it paid dividends because Augusto gets an assist to Frattesi in the last minute.
Yep.
But, yeah, it surprised me at the beginning that DeMarco wasn't playing. I think Bastoni had an incredible game, as per usual.
Always, yeah.
He's really making a name for himself as one of the very best center backs in the world. And mm-hmm. if it wasn't already assured, I think with this European run that Inter are going on, he is up there now as a top three center back. As a ball playing center back, I don't think it gets much better than that. You have Bastoni, you have Kubarsi, who is very good on the ball, but isn't on that level yet. Saliba's good on the ball. There's just not the quality that Bastoni brings to this Inter side is incredible. It's crazy. You'll see him playing attacking mid sometimes. Like, there's moments in the game where he drives up 30, 40 yards. The first goal is him making that pass to Augusto, who then crosses it to Thuram. It's him that starts the action. Overall, incredible performance. Another player that plays very well, that played very well, is Barella,
mm-hmm.
who I just feel like the Serie A, like, there's so many quality players that don't get brought forward as one of the best, some of the best in the world, but they're Barella, Bastoni. I think those two players in their respective positions are top five in their respective positions.
I agree. I could see Inter doing it, man.
Me too.
Genuinely, I could see Inter doing it. Like, Inter has been kind of weird the last couple of years. Growing up, we didn't have the Inter that maybe the generation before had Inter. There was always like a sleeping giant. And now seeing them come alive with these tactics and just even with some of the names that we have never associated with being Champions League winning quality, like Matteo Darmian could be a Champions League winner. Marko Arnautovic could be a Champions League winner. This shit is insane. Like Henrik Mkhitaryan in big 2025. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, and he's playing well too.
It's not even, playing great.
It's not even like he's one of the bad players on a good team. He's
for sure.
He's playing very, very well.
Like it's mental to me how Simone Inzaghi has come into this team and done wonders.
I love that manager, by the way.
Yeah,
I love that manager. And whenever he pants him on the touchline, he's always yelling at his players. You can tell he's a very perfectionist guy, and his tactics absolutely reflect that.
And it's so odd, but so like so great to watch. Because it's just so, like, unconventional. Like, Bastoni, like the midfield line and the defensive line will just shift. Yeah. Will just swap places completely. like
even Acerbi, too. Like, he'll go on runs as well. It's not just Bastoni. It's the three center backs in that 3-5-2. They'll go on runs.
Known ball-playing center back, Matteo Acerbi. Like Francesco Acerbi. My apologies. Yeah. It's insane, dude. And now they're going to the San Siro, where I don't think Inter conceded more than one goal in a single game.
I think in this entire tournament, they conceded three goals. So good luck, Bayern.
Good luck to Bayern. Not that they can't do it.
When you're relying on Müller and with all the injuries that you have, it's going to be very difficult.
Look, Harry Kane had his chances in this game. Mm-hmm. There's that one, that beautiful run by Michael Olise that he hit off the post.
Yes.
Guerrero had a good chance. I think Olise had a good chance of his own.
Yeah.
Overall, like, decent. Like, not a bad effort from Bayern, but it just seemed like Inter were happy to not, like, lose this game, but they did even better than that. Mm-hmm. And, like, now it just seems like you're at a massive disadvantage heading there, and I don't know if you can surmount it. So
I think there's a class difference.
I think there is, yeah.
Yeah. It's as simple as that.
It was great seeing Thomas Müller get the goal as well.
Yes, it was amazing.
He was, like... I don't know if I think we've potted since we found out that he'll be leaving Bayern, but
yeah,
it seemed poetic that he was the one saving them in this game until Fratesi had other plans.
Yeah.
The ghost of Pandev had other plans.
The ghost of Pandev, that's new.
It's really sad to see Bayern getting rid of Thomas Müller. I won't lie.
Yeah.
It's like, man, I'm growing.
That entire legacy is just insane.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like, been there since he was a literal child.
Yeah. He's won so much with them.
Yep.
So many Champions Leagues, League final goals.
Ugh. Anyways, let's move on to Wednesday's games. Where you're gonna be?
I'm a little excited for this.
Do you want to talk about your game first or Barca's?
It's up to you.
Let's talk about Barca's game first.
As the host, you choose.
Let's talk about Barca's game first.
Sure. Let's talk about Barca's game first.
A cheeky 4-0 win at home against Borussia Dortmund.
You want to talk about difference of class? That is a prime example of it.
Yes.
And I don't think there's many teams in Europe that go bar for bar with Barcelona this season.
Borussia Dortmund, it seemed like their luck had run out. They've been pretty poor in the Bundesliga this season, but in the Champions League, always turned it on for some reason. But it seemed like that came to an end in this game. First, it was Rafinha in the 25th minute with a wonder goal, I think you can describe it as.
My brother, why are you doing that?
He almost pulled a nanny.
He almost did, but the worst part is you're robbing Kubarsi of his first Champions League goal.
Yeah.
In his career.
I understand that he's going for the Ballon d'Or. He wants to be top scorer in the Champions League. All of that. He wants to continue this historic season. And at the end of the day, that mentality is what's getting Rafinha to this level. Anyways.
Absolutely.
So I understand from that perspective. Let's not pretend that the greats have not pulled out.
Yeah.
You know, some bullshit like that.
Yep.
But if I'm Kubarsi, man, I'm a little bit damn.
There was a press conference after the game. The first thing he said is, I'd like to apologize to Kubarsi for stealing that goal.
Fair.
Which is fair enough, but man.
Yeah. How many goals is he on now in the Champions League? I can tell you right now, he's now on 12.
12.
He's actually nearing Ronaldo's record.
But I think you shouldn't look at it like that anymore because it's the new format, right?
True. Two more games. Yeah.
There's more games. I think you have to look at it as two different eras.
True.
Because there's going to be somebody that beats Ronaldo's record this
Fuck,
year.
Fuck, that is true. I didn't even think of that. I didn't even think of that.
Like, he might do it this year, but even in the next couple of years, there's going to be players, thinking of Haaland, thinking of Mbappe,
yeah,
that will probably beat Ronaldo's record just because there's those two extra games against not great teams.
So
that you can
there wasn't a round of against. There wasn't a round of 32 before beforehand, right?
There's two more games in the league phase,
and so there's four more games. If you're in like the wild card or the playoff spot, then there's four more extra games.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Then so yeah, it should be viewed as two different eras. So if he does beat Ronaldo's record, incredible achievement, don't get me wrong.
Like, yeah.
Absolutely incredible. But the stat maker should separate the two, like the two eras, in my opinion.
I don't think that's gonna happen, unfortunately.
I don't think so either, but it should. Let's be honest.
It should.
Yeah.
Okay. A big shout out to Rafinha. Lewandowski still grabbing a brace.
40th goal in this season for someone that was getting called washed by Barcelona fans themselves earlier on in the season and the last season.
All time Champions League scorers, it goes Ronaldo, it goes Messi, and then it goes Lewandowski.
Yep. There's nothing you can't deny his level.
For sure.
To score 40 goals at 36 years old for Barcelona is simply incredible. And you can't
We know he can't like, you know, carry a team like he once could. But absolutely, if he's playing with Lamine Yamal, with Rafinha, with Pedri, with De Jong, with Fermín López behind him, then
Fermín López we have to talk about.
Yes, he was excellent this game as so well. Good. Like he's gonna cook as well. And like I think they're fine in the striker position if they have this firepower to aid that striker. And the second goal in particular, oh my god.
Bro, that
they're passing it around like Prime Barca, Yamal with the line splitter to Fermín López.
Rafinha. Second goal.
Lewandowski's second goal.
Oh, Lewandowski's
second goal. Lewandowski's second goal.
Yes.
The line splitting through ball to Fermín López, who cuts it across for Lewandowski, who finishes neatly. But the first one was sexy too.
I think the first one's second better than the second one. Just in terms of the link up between the three forwards, it's literally MSN. The whip from Lamine Yamal to Rafinha on his head, and Rafinha perfectly places his header to Lewandowski. It doesn't get much better than that. It does not get much better than that.
But you see how excited this man is getting? Oh. Talking about Barcelona. My goodness.
Chill.
They're so fun to watch, dude. Them and PSG, man. Oh, my
God. Bro, if we get that Champions League final between Barcelona and PSG, it will go down as one of the best... The most quality on a pitch in a Champions League final.
I absolutely agree. I absolutely agree.
Call it recency bias. Call it whatever you want. I think when you look at every single player on both teams, there's quality there on every single position.
Yep.
That double pivot in Barcelona, the Pedri and De Jong.
Yep.
When all this is said and done and Barcelona win their treble this season, if they do, it'll go down as one of the best double pivots in history.
I think.
The way that Frankie De Jong kind of transformed this season, where last season he wasn't really present for Barcelona. He wasn't really there. There was a lot of mistakes. There was a lot of mishaps in there. And the way that this season he is able to transform his game alongside Pedri, I think it says a lot about his character. And it's great. It's good for him.
Yep. Let's talk about Fermín López for a little bit, because he's not even an out-and-out starter for Barcelona this season. Mm-hmm. Like, we really talk about squads needing to be taking teams to this historic level. You need a full squad. And when you have Gavi, when you have Fermín López, when you have Dani Olmo in that position, and all three of them can come in and put up these kind of performances, it's insane. Like, Fermín López, you wouldn't think of as like a typical La Masia graduate. He doesn't really have, like, he has that tenacity. Like, you don't think of him as like a Xavi or an Iniesta, but his tenacity and his willingness and the amount that he ran yesterday is fucking insane. Yeah. You would think that Pedri's the La Masia graduate, and Fermín López is the one that they brought in from Las Palmas or whatever. Oh my God. Either way, fucking unreal. That Barcelona midfield. You're absolutely right in saying they're the best in the world, because they're also the deepest in the world.
Thank you.
And yeah, that take, I think it was somewhat obvious.
So many people hated on it.
Obvious at the time, I think it should have been. But they're proving you right every single
time. So many people were hating on it. Blake being the first guy, like, I don't understand this.
He said what?
This guy really said that Real Madrid's midfield was better than Barcelona's midfield. What the fuck are we doing?
Yeah, you have. What are we doing? The depth showed through. Ronald Araujo coming on as well. I don't know why he wasn't starting in this game, if I'm being honest.
Well, let's be honest. Inigo Martinez and Cubarsí this season
have been working very well.
Unstoppable. Yes. Unstoppable.
Yes. That double block from Araujo, though, very nice.
Yes. And it's not like Dortmund didn't have any chances before in this game either.
No. Gerasi had a big miss.
Before the 2-0, I think they're still in it. Before the 2-0. Yep. Gerasi has a big, big chance, which he should score.
Yep.
I don't know if it's back to reality for Gerasi, where he was kind of firing off all cylinders in the league phase.
Yep.
I don't know if it was normal back then for him to be firing off all cylinders, or if it's normal now to be back to his to a decent level, right?
Yeah.
I think he was kind of overperforming in the league phase. But you have to score that, right? And there's a lot of chances that Dortmund do get that they kind of waste, in my opinion.
Facts.
Because they are in the game up until the second half, in my opinion, at least.
Yeah. Like, Dortmund have decent pieces. They have a lot of injuries out this year. Like, Schlotterbeck back, maybe their best center back, is out until October. They don't have Sabitzer. They didn't start, like, Süle in this game. Like, you're starting Emre Can at center back. It's always going to be tough. But... like, overall, they have decent pieces here where they should not be conceding four at Barcelona. But, like, they're just not on the level.
Yeah.
They're just not on the level. This is not a bad team at all in Dortmund, but they are just not at the fucking level. It's mental.
I think it's a manager thing as well. I mean, you had Nuri Sahin at the beginning of the season. Yep.
Got sacked.
Now it's Niko Kovac. Who is it?
I can tell you right now, it is Niko Kovac.
Yeah, so Niko Kovac was coach of Bayern.
Yep.
I think when Hansi Flick was his assistant coach. I think that's what it was.
I think you're right.
Something like that. Yep. And now look at the...
got fired in November of 2019. Hansi Flick took over and then
brought
him to the Champions
League. It's funny to see how Hansi Flick has built his career, and now Niko Kovac is kind of struggling to build his career when he was higher up than Hansi Flick. It's kind of cool. It's kind of funny to see.
I would agree. Okay. Anything else in this game, really? Like,
I mean, apart from Barca's dominance and that they should probably get to the Champions League final and win it, there's not much to say.
I think top three favorites right now, before the second legs, it goes Barca, PSG, Inter.
That's my order as well.
Yeah.
Barca, PSG, Inter, Arsenal, and then the four. I think the semifinals are already set.
Yeah.
The closest game is Inter-Bayern, but I think everybody that's leading their ties right now will go through to the semifinal.
Fair. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Speaking of Leeds, you've waited patiently for 57 minutes. Let's get on to it now. PSG 3, Aston Villa 1, a very dominant performance, even beyond the 3-1 scoreline. I'm lost for words, Antoine. Just give it to me.
I am lost for words as well, because... like, I'm thinking of all the PSG teams that I've watched play over the last years. I think this is the best one. I think this is the most fluent one, the most coherent one out of all of them. This is the best PSG team of all time. I seriously think so. And we've reached Champions League finals before with teams with players who might be better individually. But as a team, playing as 11 players, pressing as 11 players, you had... Unai Emery's team and you have Luis Enrique's team are top two.
Yep.
And I think it's no question. This, the amount of joy that I get from watching my PSG team this year, it's indescribable. It seriously is. From the center backs to the strikers. Notice I didn't mention the goalkeeper. From the center backs to the strikers, there's quality everywhere.
Yep. Man. So many years of PSG buying superstar after superstar, and this season was not supposed to be this. This was supposed to be, you know, step two of like a 3-4-step process where in a couple of years, you're in a position to win the Champions League. Nobody thought you'd be here this quickly.
Hey, I said at the beginning of the season, and even when Mbappe left, that we would be better without him. And look what's happening.
You know, even the first half of this season, you were not. Anywhere near this good.
But it was building for the rest of the season.
Mm.
I think this game in particular is a great example because we're playing against a low block in Aston Villa. When you look at at the beginning of the season.
Telling us about low blocks.
Yes, when we played against low blocks. I want to use Girona as an example. The first game of our Champions League campaign. We play against Girona. It's a low block. It's 0-0 until the 90th minute. And we have the ball all game, and we cannot find a way to do it. In this game, Aston Villa score first. They go into their low block. Even before they score, they're in their low block.
Yep.
And we create so many opportunities, and we have that quality now. Yep. And I think now the players, they don't get worried that they're not going to score after being one down against a team that plays low block.
Yeah.
And I think it's because of the quality that we have, especially in the midfield, the Vitinhas, the João Neves, the Fabian Ruiz, their ability to retain the ball, to find passes, to soak up pressure. It brings confidence to the forwards and to the people that actually need to make the differences, that they will get more chances and they will score and ultimately flip the game on its head.
Yeah.
And it helps so much that you have Kvaratskhelia, Dembele, and Doué, even Bakura on the wings that are not afraid to take their man on, are not afraid to make the difference, are not afraid to shoot from far when the opportunity is presented to them. The evolution in our game from September when we played against Girona as a low block, where it's 0-0 until the last minute, where Gazzaniga scores an own goal, to now playing against Villa, who are low block, and we end up scoring three past them.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to be studied.
Yes, 100%. It's been such a fast shift. And I think getting VAR in the winter has been a big part of that. I think he has settled in so beautifully. Like, he is... like, I don't even know what to tell you, man. Like...
I'm in love, seriously. I called my girlfriend. I was like, Selena, I have to tell you something. I have another love. I found another love. And his name is Désiré Doué. She's like, okay. It's funny. Anyways, no, but Kvaratskhelia, Désiré Doué, even Dembele, people thought he had a bad game. I didn't think it was too bad of a game. I thought he created a lot of opportunities. But the quality, man, on every single goal. Désiré Doué not being afraid to take that curler off balance too. And there's so many opportunities in the game where he dribbles. I think of the one in particular is he gets the ball in the midfield. It's a one-on-one. It's a 50-50 ball. He roulettes past a defender.
Yep.
And then trickles his way into the box, and ultimately his shot gets blocked. But that just shows the quality and the confidence that this player has. At 19 years old, there is no youngster in the world, French youngster in the world, mm-hmm. let me put it that way. There's no French youngster in the world with a more complete package than Désiré Doué has right
Facts.
Now.
Facts.
In every aspect of his game. And also his off-the-ball movement is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
It's second to none. He works off the ball, unlike some other superstars that have gone through PSG and that have hindered our chances to win the Champions League.
He could be a legit global fucking superstar if he keeps this up with the Neymar play style, with the mentality stuff you're talking about. Like, legit, like, bro, even the fact that his last name is French for gifted.
Yeah.
That's fucking crazy, it's bro. Insane.
I'm struggling to remember, apart from Lamine Yamal, Messi, and Ronaldo, a young player that in such a short span of time made it unanimously known that he is a fucking baller.
Yep.
Désiré Doué is a perfect example of that.
Facts.
Kvaratskhelia too, not as young, but what a dog. What a dog. What a player. The quality on his goal to fake out the curl.
Poor ball Desassi, roll it past.
Desassi's on his ass 5 minutes into his game. And we were talking about off the ball movement. Kvaratskhelia runs like a dog when he's not on the ball. His press is insane. Nothing to say, man. I this team can win it all.
They can.
This team can win it all.
It's fucking crazy.
Vitinha too had a great game. A lot of people saying that he didn't have a good game. I saw on social media.
Really?
I thought he was incredible throughout. Yeah. Name me a midfielder apart from Pedri that can control the tempo of a game as well as Vitinha can.
Facts.
Nobody can. Maybe Barella, but other than that, if he wants the game to be fast paced, he can make it fast paced. If he wants to slow the game down, he can slow the game down.
Yep.
He'll find that pass. There's so many instances again in that Villa game where Hakimi makes a run. Hakimi, we have to talk about too, by the way. Incredible player. Hakimi makes a run into the box, and Vitinha just finds him with a perfect lofted ball. I think there's not much better in terms of quality in the world.
Facts. God, dude, it's fucking. As a Portuguese man, seeing Vitinha and Neves doing so well next to each other, it makes me so excited.
Yeah.
It makes me so excited.
The future is bright for Portugal, for sure.
Well, it's bright as fuck for France.
Yeah, fair enough.
Fuck, man. I have a little rivalry here for the next couple of years.
Shall we touch on Fabian Ruiz a little bit?
Yes. Go apologize.
I think I start to understand it now with Fabian Ruiz, where in previous seasons, where I was maybe hating on him a little bit.
Just unnecessarily.
No, I think it was warranted. Actually, no. The argument I'm about to make literally proves why it's not warranted. But I was hating on him, and PSG fans were hating on him in previous seasons. The only reason that we were hating on him is because the performances he was putting in weren't up to par. But the reason they weren't up to par is because he wasn't playing in the role that he is the best in.
Mm.
I remember last season we were playing with Ugarte as a center defensive mid. In an Enrique system, it's best to have three neutral center mids that can put in a shift on both sides of the pitch without like having one. Like Ugarte is very good defensively, but going forward isn't great. Yes. Fabian Ruiz, Vitinha, João Neves, they're good going back, they're good going forward.
Same with Zaire Emery. Yeah.
I think Fabian Ruiz he's a team player. Yep. I think that's why he shined in Spain for the Euros. It's because he complements that team so well, and now we're starting to utilize him as that team player. So I will have to apologize to Fabian Ruiz for the things I've said in the past.
Mm.
The blame will now go on to Beraldo.
I do think you guys, I think there are still question marks in your back line. If you come up against Barcelona, I would be a little bit worried.
Yeah.
Because I didn't like the way that you guys were kind of split open at that Aston Villa goal. I did not like that. Like, one simple ball across the box and just seems like everybody was in no man's land.
Well, it's just because we commit so many players forward.
That is on true our as well.
That yep. Obviously, on the counterattack, we'll get kind of destroyed like we did against Aston Villa. But I think the backline is solid. If Marquinhos is there, Pacho again had a great game. He's starting to.
When is
he's a security guard, man.
When is Marquinhos back?
I think he's just suspended for this game because he's on a yellow card.
Oh, that's why I don't see him here. Okay, that's good then.
But no, Pacho, seriously, he's a security guard, bouncer at a club. He lets nobody in.
Yeah.
One-on-one, if you don't have support against Pacho, if you're not two people going up against Pacho, you're cooked. If it's one-on-one, Pacho's winning every single time. Simple as that.
Shout out, man. Always a legend in the Benfica career mode. I'm happy to shout out. Same with João Neves, actually. Really? Got him back. Yep.
Yeah, wow.
Yep. Have not touched that thing in 2 months. Anyways, look, I was about to say at 2-1, I was texting you guys going like, if I'm an Aston Villa fan, I actually don't mind this game. Because yes, we were getting absolutely ran through, but a one goal deficit, you can take that back to Villa Park and you can build on that somewhat, maybe. 3-1,
The dagger is the 3-1, and I'm sure the vibe in the dressing room at the end of the game for Villa was not great.
Yeah.
To concede a third goal, the goal that makes it a gap of two right at the last minute.
Doubling the work that you have tough. To do.
But you were saying, obviously Villa fans would not be disappointed with it. Well, obviously they'd be upset.
But yes.
They wouldn't be too mad at a 2-1. I think if I'm a Villa fan, I look at that game that you just produced against PSG and I'm uninspired. The fact that you've been dominated for 90 minutes, had minimal chances, and PSG were just peppering you from left, right, center, 30-something shots.
Yep.
To go back to Villa Park, sure, you're only down one, but how are you going to create those chances, convert those chances, and also minimize the chances that PSG are going to create, stop them from scoring goals?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I'd be as optimistic with a 2-1 as you would say if I was a Villa fan.
You know what? I was thinking before this tie, like everybody was saying like PSG is going to run through them. And I was like, yeah, they'll dominate the ball, but Unai Emery's system, they can sit back in a low block. My internal narrative was still that PSG struggle against low blocks. I was not anticipating the level of improvement against low blocks that I saw, because it is exponential, bro. The PSG that I saw against Arsenal earlier this year, against in that Girona game, sometimes when I tuned in to
Thank you for mentioning games, that Arsenal played a low block against us. Thank you.
Yes.
Yes, because it's true. And Blake is hard, is not.
They're also amazing at that low block, like even better than Aston Villa. It's a, like it's a different level still, yeah, still the point
still ran a low block. Still put the bus there.
Yes.
Yeah.
But now seeing this improvement against low blocks, it's fucking unreal. Mm-hmm. Fucking unreal. I did not anticipate your ability to do this. I was thinking like, you know what? Marcus Rashford, Parc des Princes, they could hit them off on the break, like they'll have opportunities, but no. This was, they didn't even get half as much production done as I thought they would.
Really? Wow.
Yeah,
I thought it was a trap game as well. A lot of people were saying Aston Villa.
That's what I thought it was going to be. Yeah. Gonna
tower over Aston Villa, which they did. But coming into a favorite in a quarterfinal of a Champions League game, it doesn't happen very often for PSG. And mm-hmm. when it happens, they usually tend to disappoint. Last season against Dortmund in the semifinal, we were favorites and we heavily disappointed. Mm-hmm. So I was scared that it was gonna happen again.
Yes.
I'm happy that it didn't.
Yes. And I think you guys demolish Aston Villa even more than like that Barcelona did against Dortmund or something. Like if you converted more of your chances like that, like this would have been a, you know, we could have been looking at like a 5 or 6-1. Mm-hmm. Like it was that kind of level. But overall, great performance, great feeling going into the second leg.
Yes.
And I'm excited to see it, man.
I am too.
I might start tuning into Ligue 1 games. I'm not even fucking kidding, man.
Like, well, now that the league's done. But if you want to tune into Ligue 1 games, you can watch Strasbourg right now. Strasbourg are playing very well.
Well, I'm talking about PSG Ligue 1 games.
I'm just putting you on.
Maybe if Lyon impress me today, I'll tune into their games.
Yes, they will impress you today.
Oh, boy.
Very excited for that game.
Oh, boy.
Oh, we will be there. Ryan Cherky.
Do we move on to it, or do you have something else to say?
Let's move on to it.
By the time this episode comes out, or by the time people are listening to this episode, mm-hmm. this game would have happened.
Yeah.
So let's just go over it. Man United today go to France to take on Lyon.
It's the French Revolution.
And you're feeling very high about Lyon.
Yes, I'm feeling very high about French teams in Europe now. I think is it only PSG and Lyon left? It is. But I think they both can go very far.
Yes.
Lyon especially in the Europa League, they can make a deep run. Semifinals, maybe finals if they beat Athletic Club, but it's kind of that same thing as PSG where nobody watches them, and I think they're gonna surprise. Mm. Against Liverpool, PSG surprised everybody because nobody watches them and they thought that it was a PSG without Mbappe, all this. They ended up surprising. It's kind of the same thing with Lyon. No one really watches them. They see them in the league table, not doing great. But this season, I think they're very good. They started 2025 quite poorly, but they've kind of picked it back up lately. And they notably had a very win against Lille, I think, this last week. There's a lot of quality on that pitch. I'm thinking of Ryan Cherky, who is an absolute baller. And if he doesn't get his name known today and next week, it'll be seen as a missed opportunity for his career. Thiago Almada as well is another player
mm-hmm.
who has been balling ever since he joined them on loan. And I'm very excited to watch
him. Play for Atlanta United. I knew I recognized that name from somewhere.
Yeah.
Atlanta United, you know. MLS All-Star Thiago Almada. I'm really nervous with this game, dude. I'm really nervous with this game. We've done pretty well in the Europa League so far. Mm-hmm. Like against Real Sociedad, like that was a trap game. We go 1-0 down the second leg. But then we crawl back, eventually winning 4-1. Like, that was really good. We played, like, one of our best performances against, like, in our last outing in the Europa League. Yeah. So I'm feeling good about this, like, just about where United is in this competition. But this is not going to be easy against Lyon. Like, I fully acknowledge that.
Yeah. It's going to be tough.
Fuck, man. I'm nervous.
You see the Matic Onana thing?
Of course.
What do you think about it?
Crazy. First of all, do you be saying that? Yeah, in the first
it's kind of crazy. But do you agree with him
that Onana is like one of the worst keepers in United history? Like, I wasn't around to like modern United history. We only really have like Van der Sar and De Gea to compare him to, mm-hmm. and so on that standard, he's definitely the worst.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, like. Before Van der Sar, we had some shockers. Fabian Barthez was very bad for Man United.
He was.
We had Tim Howard at United. That was like the era between Peter Schmeichel and Edwin van der Sar. Yeah, there were some very shaky I'm pretty moments sure in there.
Wasn't Fabian Barthez renamed or nicknamed Butterfingers or something?
Yes.
I'm pretty sure he did an ad for Butterfingers. Isn't that crazy? Did he actually? I'm 99% sure he did.
So, like, if we're going back to that era, then I don't think we could put him quite on that level. Although, like, it depends. David De Gea had such a rough start at United. Nobody would have known the player that he eventually grew mm-hmm. into. Onana, for big parts of the season, was looking decent. Yeah. Although, when he does make mistakes, they are high-profile mistakes.
Yeah.
And he does have a brand of, you know.
It's mistakes you can't afford as a goalkeeper.
Exactly. Exactly.
For United, nevertheless.
Yeah. So, like, his career at United is still very, very young. We mm-hmm. don't know how it's going to go. It could go very up, but if, like, he has a falling out with the manager in a year and ends up going somewhere, like, yes, he's going to be looked at as one of the worst United keepers in history. That's just the honest-to-God truth. So Matic has a point in that sense. Onana, his clapback was so fucking pathetic, bro. Like, the first sentence of his clapback...
The first sentence is cool, right?
Let me look it up because I need the context here.
You add in that... He at least I've won a trophy for you. Come on, bro. You're talking to a Premier League winner.
So
talking about an FA Cup win last.
So he starts it off saying, "I would never be disrespectful to another club. We know that tomorrow will be a difficult game against a strong opponent. We focus on preparing a performance to make our fans proud."
Great answer.
Great.
Stop it there.
Great.
Stop it there.
You know what? This doesn't even require a social media post if you just said this in an interview. Yeah. Like, good response.
Yes.
You then end it off with saying, "At least I've lifted trophies with the greatest club in the world. Some can't say the same." What the fuck are you doing? What are you doing?
I've lifted an FA Cup actually with United's worst team in the last in their history, probably.
For real.
Yeah.
Matic is a Premier League winner with Chelsea. Yes, I don't think he won anything when he was here because he came the year after we won the Europa League. And I think from that time we didn't actually win anything before he left. Mm-hmm. But like, man.
Yeah, Matic, a lot of people forget how good Matic was. Like, Matic under Mourinho was a great player.
Yes.
Great fucking player.
Also, he posted a picture of him kissing the FA Cup. In that game, you let in a howler.
He posted a picture of him?
Yes. Him kissing the FA Cup. Like, I've lifted trophies with the greatest club in the world. First of all, I think it's one trophy.
Yeah.
Right?
I think so.
Yeah. One single trophy.
Yeah.
And you made a big miss. We won that game in spite of Andre Onana. Yeah. That's just putting it how it is.
Unbelievable.
Ah, man. So in that sense, it's like, look, if you end up putting on a world-class performance in this tie, I'll apologize. Yeah. I'll be like, fair enough. Yep. But the script has been written.
Back it up now.
Onana is going to parry a shot into Match's path, and Match is going to score today. I know that's going to happen.
If that happens, like, oh, that'd be the best
thing. That'd be all time.
If he doesn't back up his talk, I'll be... Why do you say these things?
It's like
Rafinha before playing against Argentina. He said that they were going to pepper them. They got peppered. Why do you say these things before games? Talk after. Talk after.
Yes.
And if you do talk before, back it up.
I know.
Back it up.
It'd be so easy to just not say anything, but to then smoke Leon and then say this exact statement after.
Mm-hmm. You don't have the quality or the track record to be saying these things.
Yes. You got to earn it, dude.
100%.
You got to earn it.
100%.
If you beat Leon, what Matic is saying is still probably true, but just off the fact that you beat them, you could say that shit.
Yeah.
Whatever. You beat them. Whatever. You earned it in a sense, especially if you put on a good performance.
Mm-hmm.
Saying it before makes me really worried, bro. Makes me really worried. Oh, man. All right.
FPL roundup?
Let's go on to an FPL roundup before we wrap up this podcast. We're at an hour 20 already. Yeah.
Wow. That flew by.
That fucking flew by.
What the hell?
All right. Overall, how are you feeling about FPL these days?
See, my lead is so big that I tried experimenting with captains this week. Didn't work out, but we'll keep experimenting. I got saved this week. I won't lie.
Yeah. Overall, bless you.
Thank you.
There was a clear loser with 29 points when the next worst was 43. Like, I don't even know if we talk about it.
Did they end up finding an interim manager or no?
No, nobody. No. Nobody looked after the team.
So it's just a player-led club now?
I just hear the players go out there.
Okay.
And they just They just shoot the shit.
Oh my goodness.
They just do their thing.
Wow.
Like Trent tried going on the field completely forgetting that he's injured right now. And you know what? And Gabrielle tried to come off the bench, but he's injured as well.
Oh my goodness.
So it's just an absolute disaster that team.
So who did they put the captain armband on then? Because since the manager's not deciding that anymore,
it's the captain's armband is just going to permanently be on Salah. Okay. And I think that's a fine move, whatever. Sure. Penny, if you can guess the top scorer in Shia Bade Shilate's team this week.
I'm going to go for maybe a little Cole Palmer in there.
Mark Flecken. Wow. Big 10 points. Cole Palmer got one. I don't know what you're on about.
Yeah,
it was Mark Flecken with 10, Morgan Rogers with 9, and then nobody else with over 2.
Yeah, it's sad to see it end like this.
It really is.
And I feel for the fans. This is really who I feel for the most, because the ups and downs they've been going through last season, this season.
Yeah.
It's very notable, and for them to just be toying with their mental health like that and leaving the club before the season ends, leaving it to the players, doesn't sit right with me.
It doesn't. Yeah. It doesn't. But we can barely count them in the league anymore. Like, they're far beyond. Like, they're Southampton levels.
Yeah, they're already relegated.
Yeah, exactly. Moving on to third for the week, we had no more Mr. Rice Kai. That name hits different now after this week.
It does.
He bagged 43 points, 9 points over the game week average.
Good for him.
He had Mateta with 8, Rogers with 9, Luis Diaz with 6, Salah with 4 as his captain, and Dan Burn with 6 as well.
Solid little week.
He did not play any chips this week. And yeah, that's all you could be saying, really.
Okay.
He's got Dean Henderson in net, Dan Burn, Konsa, Virgil van Dijk. You know what? This is an FPL players team, which worries me.
It is.
Because this is not the Miles team that we would normally know. Outside of like Rashford as like a weird pick.
This is
inspired by somebody.
Yeah, but who did he bring in earlier this season that we're laughing at?
Oh, so many.
Was it Onana?
So many.
Amadou Onana, was it? Oh, it was so funny.
Yes. If we just go back to Miles' team a couple of weeks ago, it didn't look as template as it did now. Like, he was rocking players, like Smith Rowe, he stuck onto for a long, long, long time.
There was one CDM I remember him bringing. Bissouma.
He brought Madueke. He brought in.
Yeah.
Yeah. What?
rough. Time.
Gabby Jesus. He brought in at one point. I knew that was gonna be such a thing that he would fall for. Yeah. He's brought in. Miles will not look at the advice. Miles will make his own decisions.
Yeah.
And that's how we know it's Miles' team. And that's commendable, because we know it's his team. He's not getting advice from nobody, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But now he's not doing that. I could tell he's sensing second place's insight. And now he's locking a little bit to the influencers. 100%. And I can see it. I can see you, Miles. I can see you. And he's not going to catch me anyways, because I'm doing the exact same fucking thing.
Okay.
Moving on to second place for the week was Roll of the Deitch. He bagged 53 points with 20 points off his bench.
Wow. 20 points off the bench?
Yeah.
From who?
Rodgers and Munoz.
Wow.
9 and 8, respectively.
That's not 20
I had
points.
Mateta for 8. I had.
That's not 20 points. That's 17 points.
That's 17 points plus 3 from the other two. I'll have you know.
Oh. Uh-huh. I thought you meant. You had 20 points come off the bench.
Uh-huh. I just did some quick math there.
No, that's what you did, though.
I know you've struggled a little bit with some quick math recently.
No. But that's what you said, though. You said 20 points coming off the bench.
No. I said 20 points on the bench.
No, you said 20 points off the bench.
Okay, well, it doesn't matter, because they're both on the bench anyway. So
you had 17 points off the bench.
But they didn't come off the bench.
They did. 17 points off the bench. 17 points came off the bench.
They didn't come off the bench. They stayed on the bench.
Oh. So you had 0 points off the bench.
So what 0 points. That's what I meant.
Oh.
That's what I meant.
I thought 20. That's why I was surprised.
No,
I was
like, no, no.
20
points? I meant good like stuff. I had 20 points sitting
that's
on
rough
my
for
bench.
You. That's rough for you.
It is rough for me.
Wow.
Yes.
Embarrassing, some would say.
53 points could have been even more. My biggest performer was big Jacob Murphy.
Oh.
Saving my week with a 16-pointer.
Yes.
Beyond that, I had Vardial go off for 9, Mateta go off for 8. And the rest are fucking nobodies. Got my captain wrong, Salah, as well. I think everybody did. But yeah, if I played Rodgers, if I played Munoz, I would have been in for a great week.
For a great
really would have separated myself. But still got 10 points
on
Miles.
What's the game week?
So I'm happy. 900K. And we move on to, would you believe this?
Obviously. Come on now.
Macaroni and Cheese in first with a big 59 points, separating himself on even more at the top of the table. On an experimental
captain week as well, I want to say.
Really?
Yeah. Captain Saka. Bukayo Saka, who was tipped to not even start, and I still did it.
That's bold.
Yeah, and it didn't pay off, but it's okay.
So you literally have my exact same team, but you played Munoz.
Except I played Munoz. You got to learn from the best.
That's literally the only difference in our team. We're bench boosting next week. That's literally the only difference in our team. Saka and Munoz are the only difference in our team.
Yeah.
Bench boost next week, I think, is the way to go.
Yep.
Deadline is tomorrow. Don't forget.
Oh, we won't be there.
I'll be there as well.
Okay.
All right. And that'll do it for
perfect
for 6 Yard Box episode 90. What an episode.
I liked it. 125. Wow.
I know.
Quite long.
For a two-man, that's crazy.
For a two-man and for only a couple games, too.
Fuck, man. Yeah. Listen, everybody. This has been another episode of the 6 Yard Box podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, be sure to like, subscribe, and do all those fantastic things. If you're watching on any of the podcast platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your platform, give us a big 5-star rating and tell us your impression of Desiree Doué and how blessed PSG are.
And Kvaratskhelia. Don't forget about him, man of the match.
Bradley Barcola, the forgotten man, I got to say.
Yeah, but hey, he's still balling when he came off the bench.
He's still balling. Yeah. Be sure to tune in these next couple of weeks because there are some big changes coming to the pod that we'll be bringing you very, very soon.
Very exciting changes.
No official announcement yet. But just stay tuned. I was literally
about to spoil it. Anyways. We out.
See everybody.